Watching the rails. Something fundamental is shifting in the financial infrastructure this week, and it starts with a 97% probability that tells us more about what markets don't know than what they do. I'm looking at Fed funds rate pricing that shows extreme confidence rates stay above 3.25% post-March, with 90% probability of staying above 3.5%. But here's what that pricing actually represents: deep uncertainty disguised as precision. The catalyst is Kevin Warsh's nomination as Federal Reserve Chair, and the market reaction reveals how the financial services industry is fundamentally repricing not just monetary policy, but the entire credibility framework that has governed U.S. central banking since the Volcker era. This isn't about whether rates go up or down in the next meeting. This is about whether the Fed maintains its inflation-fighting mandate independent of fiscal policy pressures, or whether we're entering an era where Treasury-Fed coordination becomes the new normal. Let me walk through why this matters structurally. Since Volcker established Fed independence in the early 1980s, financial markets have operated under a specific assumption: monetary policy follows economic data, not political preferences. That independence framework is what allows yield curves to function as forward-looking price discovery mechanisms. It's what gives credibility to forward guidance. It's what makes duration risk calculable. Warsh's Wall Street background and openness to greater coordination with Treasury threatens that framework. If this coordination materializes, we're looking at fundamental changes to yield curve dynamics that underpin banking sector net interest margins and fixed income market structure across the board. Long-term Treasury yields above 4.25% in this scenario would compress duration portfolios. But here's the complexity: it could simultaneously benefit banks' core lending margins, depending entirely on how steep the curve adjustment becomes. For financial services executives making capital allocation decisions, the challenge isn't modeling the rate path. The challenge is modeling the credibility path. And with the 2026 midterm election cycle adding political complexity, we could see stop-start policy cycles that make long-term planning increasingly difficult. The broader fintech pattern here extends beyond monetary policy. A less independent Fed could accelerate politicization of financial regulation more broadly. Bank supervision, capital requirements, stress testing, these could shift from systemic risk management tools to instruments of political economy. That's a fundamental change to the regulatory operating environment. Now let's connect this uncertainty premium to what's happening in credit markets, because the signals are converging. UBS is projecting 13.5% default rates in private credit markets, with particular concentration in software sector exposure. This isn't just cyclical credit tightening. This is evidence of a potential structural correction in non-bank lending that has grown to an estimated $1.6 trillion market over the past decade. Think about the assumptions that fueled the private credit boom. First, diversification away from traditional banking relationships would reduce concentration risk. Second, covenant-lite structures would provide operational flexibility that rigid bank covenants couldn't match. Third, a sustained low-rate environment would support leveraged buyout economics indefinitely. All three assumptions are now under pressure simultaneously. Software companies, which represent significant private credit exposure, face margin compression as enterprise customers rationalize their SaaS spending and AI investment crowds out legacy technology budgets. Microsoft's recent market punishment illustrates this vulnerability perfectly. If even dominant platforms face investor skepticism about AI capital intensity versus return visibility, imagine the pressure on leveraged software companies with 4 to 5 times leverage on their assets. Default rates in the mid-teens could trigger significant loss cascades through private credit portfolios. Here's the competitive landscape shift that matters. Traditional banking's regulatory capital requirements, once viewed as competitive disadvantage versus private credit, now appear as prudential safeguard. We may see migration of credit relationships back to regulated balance sheets, particularly for borrowers prioritizing stability over flexibility. Banks with relationship-based middle-market lending franchises should benefit from this rotation, assuming they maintained underwriting discipline during the private credit boom. Looking at the regulatory landscape, this creates an interesting dynamic. Regulators who spent the past 5 years worrying that private credit was siphoning risk away from supervised institutions may now face the opposite concern. How does stress in a $1.6 trillion unregulated credit market transmit back to the banking system through interconnected relationships? The key monitoring points are credit default spreads on CLO tranches, bank provision expenses in coming quarters, and private equity exit activity as portfolio companies face refinancing cliffs. These are the early warning indicators of whether this stays contained or cascades. Which brings us to commercial real estate, where office delinquency rates reached record highs in January, even as transaction volume surged. This combination tells us something important. We're entering the true price discovery phase of the commercial real estate correction. This isn't distressed paralysis. This is distressed clearing. Transaction volume surges typically indicate either capitulation selling or opportunistic buying at levels that finally clear markets. Given the delinquency rates we're seeing, this appears to be forced selling by leveraged owners and lenders working out problem assets. Regional banks, which hold approximately 70% of commercial real estate loans under $10 million, face continued provisioning pressure. The FDIC's recent attention to CRE concentration signals regulatory concern about this concentrated exposure.
The structural question is whether office market distress represents sector-specific oversupply driven by permanent work-from-home shifts or broader commercial real estate vulnerability. The data suggests office stands alone as potentially structurally impaired. Retail has shown surprising resilience. Multifamily faces pressure from new supply but benefits from demographic demand. Office is different. It may be fundamentally repricing around lower utilization rates permanently. For regional banks with CRE concentration ratios above 300%, this means heightened supervisory scrutiny. We should anticipate continued regulatory pressure for additional loan loss reserves, potentially constraining loan growth and dividend capacity. This creates M&A vulnerability for undercapitalized regionals, particularly if deposit costs remain elevated relative to historical norms. But it also creates opportunities. CMBS distress creates openings for patient capital and special situations desks. Banks with strong workout capabilities and balance sheet flexibility could acquire discounted CRE portfolios, potentially generating superior risk-adjusted returns as markets stabilize. Now let me connect these credit stress signals to something that initially looks unrelated but actually reveals the same underlying dynamic. Silver declined 40% to $80 per ounce. Gold dropped 15% to $4,600 per ounce. These aren't just precious metals corrections. The velocity and magnitude of these moves suggest forced liquidation, likely tied to margin calls in derivative markets. This signals that leverage ratios across speculative positions may be higher than previously understood, and liquidity buffers are thinner than assumed. For financial services firms, this matters in three specific ways. First, prime brokerage margin exposure requires careful monitoring. If clients are getting margin called on commodity positions, what else are they leveraged into? Second, wealth management clients and alternative strategies may face unexpected losses and redemption pressure, creating liquidity demands on advisor relationships. Third, bank trading desks with commodity exposure face volatility-driven capital charges that could constrain other business lines. The fundamental question is whether precious metals can sustain elevated levels without a manufacturing renaissance. ISM manufacturing improvement appears driven by inventory restocking. Customer inventories at 38.7 indicate depleted stocks being rebuilt, rather than sustained demand acceleration. Global PMI data indicates limited sustainability. That suggests these price levels were speculation-driven rather than fundamental-driven. The broader fintech pattern here is that we're seeing a deleveraging cycle across multiple asset classes simultaneously. Private credit stress, CRE distress, precious metals volatility, these are different manifestations of the same underlying dynamic. Leverage unwind in an environment where the risk-free rate matters again and central bank put options less certain. So let me synthesize what changed in the fintech industry outlook today. We're witnessing three converging forces that alter the competitive landscape for financial services. First, Fed independence uncertainty creates a credibility discount across monetary policy expectations. This makes duration risk harder to price and capital allocation decisions more complex. The firms that can navigate start-start policy cycles will have competitive advantage. Second, credit is repricing across both traditional and alternative channels. Private credit structural correction may drive business back to regulated balance sheets, favoring banks that maintained underwriting discipline during the private credit boom. Regional banks with CRE concentration face continued pressure, creating consolidation opportunities. Third, leverage is unwinding across speculative positions, from precious metals to private credit to commercial real estate. This favors defensive positioning, equal-weighted equity strategies over market cap-weighted approaches, dividend is over growth speculation, traditional credit structures over exotic instruments. The through line is that financial infrastructure assumptions built during the zero-rate era are being stress-tested in real time. The winners will be firms with strong balance sheets, disciplined underwriting, and the patience to acquire distressed assets at clearing prices. The losers will be firms that assumed permanent liquidity, permanent low rates, and permanent Fed accommodation. Fintech thesis update. The industry is transitioning from growth at any cost to profitability with discipline. Regulatory arbitrage advantages are diminishing as regulators focus on shadow banking risks. Traditional financial services firms with strong compliance infrastructure and relationship-based models are regaining competitive position. The disruption narrative is giving way to the integration narrative. Watching the rails. Until tomorrow.